and start with the Pledge of Allegiance, if you'd join me, please.
Mr. Chair, before we do that, we have been appropriately noticed.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We don't, well, there are, I think there is at least one recognition, and Dr. Iser has a few announcements.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to let you know that during the period of time in which we had essentially buyouts for people who wanted to retire in the categories that we were looking at layoffs, at the very last minute, Valerie Clark, who usually sits up here, decided to take that, and so you won't be seeing her from now on. We did invite her here for recognition, but she wanted to ease in retirement without needing to come back here. I do want to let you know that Marcia Gershon, who is on the far end, will be helping Jackie Wells today in taking notes, and in the long run, we'll see how things come through for perhaps bringing her up to my office. There was a question this week from some of the board members about an update on the fire at the recycle facility, and we will have Brian Northrum here to give you an update on that during the CHO comments. I think we all want to join the new Mayor Littman in congratulating him on his new post. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you.
And I think you have a reminder, but when we get to the agenda, sir, we wanted to pull item Roman numeral 441 related to EMS service regulations. We did have a request from industry to do one more workshop, which is now planned for a week from Monday. It'll be here in this room. We have had three noticed workshops before. This one will be noticed, if it isn't already, by Friday, in order to meet those deadlines. So that's why we're pulling those regulations, to have one more workshop. And then, sir, I think you have a reminder.
I do. Thank you.
Thank you. And so the reminder I have is to submit a nomination of officers formed. Is there a deadline for that? Before the meeting, so okay. So we still got time, but just a reminder to everybody, submit those if you haven't already. And then we will move on to our first public comment, which is public comment on items that are on the agenda. Do we have anyone wishing to speak in public comment today? Seeing none, we'll move to adoption of the May 22nd, 2014 agenda. Do I have a motion or any discussion?
So moved.
Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that motion carries. We'll move to the consent agenda, item number 3. Any discussion?
I just have one question.
Yes.
Thank you. It's just on the petition on the RTC bus transit passes. Do we track them, or I know they do as a business, so they give you just bus passes to give to clients? Is that how it works? I know we do it with social services,
yeah,
too.
We keep logs, and we keep it all locked in a safe, and we kind of treat it like money. And we have a tracking, so passes in, passes out, and, you know, track it through a logging system.
And what is the majority of the use for?
Like in TB clinic, for people to come back for their directly observed therapy, for people who are in the sexual health clinic who are being treated to make sure they come back with their three doses for a shot or something like that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would make a motion then to adopt the consent agenda or the consent items.
You have a motion? In a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that motion carries. We'll move to number 4, our public hearing action items, and we have taken number 1 off the agenda, correct?
That's correct.
So we're on to number 4-2, which is consider adopt proposed fee schedule for EMS and trauma.
And we'll bring Mary Ellen Britt, who's our director for EMS, up to discuss this item with you.
Good morning.
My name is Mary Ellen Britt, the manager of the Office of Emergency Medical Services and Trauma System.
And my name is Dr. Christian Young. I'm the medical director for the EMS Office and Trauma System.
Good morning. Over the last several months, I have been working with administration to address the deficits in the EMS and trauma system budget. The process began with a thorough review of our current expenditures, which resulted in reductions in the budget where possible. A cost analysis of business activities performed by staff demonstrated there was a gap between our current fees and the costs involved in actually providing the services. Further, new services have been added that are not addressed in the current fee schedule. In general, the Office of Emergency Medical Services and Trauma System has not increased fees in more than 10 years. The proposed fee schedule is based on time and effort analysis performed and increases the fees incrementally over a three-year period. To reduce the impact on existing permitted agencies, fees were not increased in fiscal year 15 for certification and licensure of EMS personnel, which would have very high multipliers, or the renewal of instructors or critical care endorsements. Three public workshops were held to allow interested persons to comment on the proposed fee schedule. It was presented to the Medical Advisory Board on May the 7th, where it was unanimously endorsed and recommended to be sent to the board for consideration and adoption. Now I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Chris.
Thank you. Mary Ellen, you mentioned new services that had never been contemplated, I'm assuming. So could you give us an idea of what those might be?
Sure. As an example, we have we authorize training centers, and in the past we have not charged a fee for that authorization process.
Okay.
And there is an application involved. We go out and audit at those sites, and then we provide ongoing auditing on an annual basis of the training that they provide.
Is that police and fire, or just?
It's fire and private EMS
and
agencies,
private,
so our permitted EMS agencies.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, Susan.
So does for the services that are listed here where we're increasing fees, does that bring us closer in line? Actually, does it bring us in line with what the services actually cost us?
Is it
self-sufficient?
No, ma'am, it does not.
Okay.
The current revenues that we bring in only cover about 11% of the activities that are done by our office. So over the course of 3 years, it will increase to hopefully about 30% by year 17. But it is unlikely that based on fees alone that we will be self-sufficient. And to that end, our Trauma System Advocacy Committee is working to try to explore other dedicated and sustainable funding sources for EMS and trauma.
Thank you.
Tim.
Just kind of along that line, just to understand the dollars, I understand our revenue currently for all EMS is around $67,000 and the expense is about $363,000. Does that sound in line with what we're working with?
Pretty close to, yes. My budget is $667,000 approximately. And right now, I am underspent because we lost a position in my office, and we've also been very diligent in trying to make sure that we are being thoughtful about how we're spending our money. And my budget is reduced for next year. I think I'm sitting at about $534,000 for my budget for next year.
If I may comment. Because of the budget deficits that we had this year, Mary Ellen had two openings, I guess both of which occurred after I arrived. And originally I held both of those openings open. But understanding the workload and the importance of Mary Ellen and her agency to the entire valley, we did allow one of those positions to be filled. So as a reminder, virtually all of her budget is 80-10, her tax revenues. What I'm hopeful to be able to do with the first year increment is to look at trying to fill that last position. The regulations that we pulled dealt with temporary events that would be held, street fairs and so on, and some of the fees that you're approving would eventually go into effect once we get those regulations into effect. But that's another whole section that was passed in the last legislature that, of course, we didn't contemplate, and we've been working with legal counsel and with the cities and the county on how to implement the those particular EMS regulations. So once we bring those back to you next month, then those fees would go into effect.
Does that address nonprofit events as well, what you were talking about, or is that something entirely
different? It does. The law does require nonprofit events to be covered as well.
Because I know that my jurisdiction, City of Boulder City, had some concerns about nonprofits who, you know, they have one-time annual events to do their annual fundraiser, and they were concerned about being prohibited from doing it because of the extensive costs. And so that you're going to have separate regulations on that, or is that addressed in what we're approving today?
Those are in the regulations that we've put on hold until we have the final public comment. Again, a week from Monday, I believe, is when it's scheduled for industry. But I believe the Boulder City Fire Chief has participated in, if not one, all three of the public workshops that he has. We do understand, and of course, we've been in contact with Boulder City about these kinds of issues. The law is pretty clear, though, and our regulations pretty directly follow the law almost verbatim as best we could. So I don't believe that there is an exclusion for not-for-profits. So we have no choice in that, we see it.
But there's some kind of reduced fee schedule is what's being contemplated, or what is it?
I'll defer that to Mary Ellen.
Again, those fees were based on time and effort, and the fee would be $200 for approval of the medical plan, which includes a site visit.
Okay.
So understanding that piece of it, the site visit would then also be charged at $51.73 per hour while on site, or that site visit is included in the $200?
It is included in the $200. That separate site visit would be if someone were to report to us a violation, we had to go out to the site to see whether or not they were in compliance with the regulations. That would be a separate fee charged.
Chris.
Thank you. But the charge applies if nonprofits or for-profits are only selling food, or is it just to have an event?
This has nothing to do with food.
Okay, because there's a permit fee for that as well.
There's a permit fee for that as well, which it would be run out of EHS. This is to comply with the new law that was passed in the last legislature about having appropriately trained and the appropriate number of appropriately trained personnel at events of various sizes.
Right.
So it's a whole separate law, has nothing to do with food.
Okay, but I think we need to know that there's other fees on top of those fees depending on what happens, and that's always the trigger, especially for nonprofits, that kind of ratchet up as far as that's concerned. And then if I look at Attachment D, these are the proposed fee schedules for certification and licensure.
This was intended to demonstrate to you the increases over the three-year period per department or per permitted agency.
Okay, so when I look at Boulder City Fire, just as an example, they're every 2 years, therefore that's their asterisk. But then I go to Clark County, then I go to Henderson. It looks like we treat pretty much City of Las Vegas, everybody's pretty much treated dollar-wise about the same, correct?
That is correct.
And then you go to, I'm sorry, vehicle inspections. What are we inspecting there?
We inspect each ambulance or rescue unit at least annually to ensure that they're in compliance with the inventory that is approved by the Medical Advisory Board.
Well, because of the whatever that map is for where how many are supposed to be located within for the.
This is the inventory for each individual ambulance.
So their drugs and their equipment and the cleanliness of the unit, those sorts of things. We inspect each of the ambulances or rescue units for each permitted agency at least annually.
Is that a statute too?
Yes, actually it is.
And so they can't inspect and submit a report. It has to be done by you all and then charged.
Mm-hmm.
My best guess is that this is done by the state and other counties, and we have our own EMS authority down here, as you well know.
Right, yeah. The rurals would be treated differently. It would probably be by the state then. Okay, thank you.
Lori?
Is there some kind of national standard about inventory and supplies that have to be kept on the ambulance? And do they have to show, is there an accreditation process or something?
There is a national standard. We use the American College of Emergency Physicians recommended inventory. And we are actually going to be reviewing that at our June 4th Medical Advisory Board meeting to see if it needs to be updated. As you know, we're having issues with national drug shortage, and so some of the agencies have approached us and asked if we would consider perhaps reducing the TAR levels on some of those medications, because often they expire, especially the agencies that don't transport frequently, and that's a great cost to them. So we are working with them to see if we can reduce costs in other areas, and that's one of the areas we're considering.
The whole process, as I think you know, some of you who are newer may not, but all of these kinds of protocols, this inventory, is promulgated by the Medical Advisory Board, which includes all of the fire services and the freestanding ambulances. So it goes through a very significant vetting process through the EMS system as a whole. We don't just promulgate regulations. We work with the Medical Advisory Board. So the regulations that we would have brought to you have also been approved by the Medical Advisory Board right after the third public hearing, as well as the fee schedule, as Mary Ellen mentioned a little bit earlier.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion? Okay, do I have a motion?
It's a public hearing.
Move for approval.
Do we need to have...
Second.
Needed. Was there a public comment on this?
This is a public comment.
Okay. Invite anybody wishing to speak in public comment on this item to come forward.
Sam Scheller with Guardian Elite Medical Services. I just wanted to say that some of these proposed increases in the costs are going to significantly impact our operational budget at Guardian Elite.
Negatively or positively?
It's going to negatively impact our operational budget in that we're going to have to reassign funds to different areas to cover these increases in cost.
Thank you.
Could I ask him a question? Were you able to participate in the workshops?
Yes, I was, and that was my comment then as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on this item in public comment? All right, we have
a question.
Another question.
So in the services provided, are they billing insurances, or how are they obtaining their reimbursement?
The permitted agencies that transport are able to be reimbursed for those services. Mr. Scheller has a different business model.
So to answer your question for Guardian Elite, we are a special permitted purpose agency here with the Southern Nevada Health District. So we actually provide EMTs, paramedics, and ambulances to special events. So we actually don't bill patients directly. We actually bill event promoters for our services rendered. So basically the way our model works is that we have ambulances, EMTs, paramedics, and if we go to an event, we bill our promoters or event organizers an hourly rate. So we are basically charging just a flat rate for an event, whether we transport, whether we don't transport, whether we use supplies, whether we not use supplies, it's one flat rate based on our business model.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Clarification.
Yes.
On the motion, when is the effective date of the beginning of the increases?
July 1st.
Okay, July 1st of this year.
Of this year, that's correct. So the first year that you see would be for FY15, FY16, FY17, and I don't want to prolong this too much, but we really looked at the cost structure for that first year, as Mary Ellen pointed out, and that everyone else's budgets have already been made. They've been submitted through their political entities. We could not, in good conscience, go forward with the amount that we needed to raise except during the second and third years.
Right, I believe we have a motion and a second. Then, if there's no further discussion, then I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll then move on to Roman numeral 5, report discussion action items. And number one under that is the three-year budget projection.
Thank you. And I apologize, I don't have anything written to bring to you. We've been trying to analyze the budget with the changes that the board made last month and to get a better handle on what our costs will be over the next 3 years. What we can tell you is that our projections are using a 2.5% increase in employee wages over the next 3 years. We're currently in negotiation with the union. I would suspect those of you on the board might think that it could come in above that. I think we need to keep those increases as close to that as possible in order to make our budget over the next 3 years. We had originally put in a 4% increment for the tax transfer, but in talking to Don at the county, he suggested, Don Burnett, he suggested that we use only a 3%. So we're in the process of modifying all of those numbers, looking at the changes that the board made last month and trying to get a better handle on that. I believe that we'll be able to bring back a better estimate. I can tell you, though, that that given the two things that we have discussed several times in this chamber, one is the increase into the maternal, child, and adolescent health funds of $600,000, and the fact that we have other unknowns, particularly the lab, and trying to work through a plan to increase revenues there, that makes us not look good over the next 3 years. We would decrementally decrease our end fund balance over the next 3 years. We want to sit down, go through those numbers much more carefully than we have been now, use the changes that Mr. Burnett suggested, and come back to you next month.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Yeah, just one question. The 2.5%, is that all wages, or is that wages and benefits, such as health care, retirement?
That's just wages. That's correct. And I will say, if I can, this is what I've had to put in my planning. My thinking is that your intent last month was to give $600,000 for program. To remind you, there's indirect on top of that, and the indirect would be somewhere about $125,000 to $150,000 more. I did not believe that your intent was for me to take it out of that $600,000, so the one-year increment would be about $725,000 to $750,000, not the $600,000 that you directed last month. So when you project that out over 3 years, it's well over $2 million that I have to find resources to cover.
Any other questions or comments? All right, thank you. We'll look forward to you bringing that back to us.
Thank you.
All right, we're on to item number 6, board reports. Do we have any board reports? Tim.
I just want to thank Jackie Rezitar and the environmental group for the meeting that we had with industry about, 2 weeks ago now, with the food industry, and I think it's good to have that dialogue and continue that on a quarterly basis. So thank you, and we'll look forward to continuing that.
She has invited me to the next one, so with
you ought to come.
I'd be happy to attend.
All you can eat.
That's right.
All I can eat. You don't know how much I can eat.
Well, we'll find out.
Question for that, Tim or Jackie? Do you involve the Chefs Association now, because they had been integral a couple years back? Because sometimes people thought it filtered down to them, and it didn't. So the
I will coordinate with Catherine Jacoby and make sure that they're invited.
Okay, all right, thank you.
And I can't recall who their head of that group is, but he did attend.
Okay, so it used to be from CSN, but I can't remember if it is still now.
But he did attend. There were quite a few chefs at the meeting.
All right, this meeting's moving on very quickly. Any objections to that? All right.
Not from here.
Number 7, health officer and staff reports, and turn it over to Dr. Iser for comments.
Thank you. I wanted to give you a brief building update. Right after your approval to go forward, we put in an offer on the building at, I can't, 278 South Decatur, and we are still waiting to hear from them. I've actually talked to a friend who works for Target, and there are a couple of holdups. One is that we might be considered, what's the right term, obnoxious? An obnoxious tenant because of our clinical facilities, and partially because perhaps we are an office building as well. We did submit a notice from East Las Vegas from the landlord there about how much business our facility in East Las Vegas brings in to the shopping center. I believe Councilwoman Tarkanian and Councilman Beers has been very helpful to us in going forward, providing a lot of support and information, and we continue to go forward. We were originally told that they would accept or reject our offer last week, but then they heard additional offers were coming in, and so it may be this week or next. So we are looking at backup plans at this point. I don't have those for you yet. We hope to be able to consummate some sort of deal within the next couple of weeks. I'm happy to answer questions on that.
Okay. Doesn't look like there are any. We'll wait to hear on that as well.
And then Brian Northam is here.
Mm-hmm. Brian, please come up there and identify yourself.
I'm Brian Northam. I'm the acting supervisor of the Solid Waste and Disposal mm-hmm. Permitted Disposal Facilities Program for the Southern Nevada Health District. I have been since July of 2013. Did you want to ask questions about the incident at the recycling center, or do you want me to go over our just a synopsis?
We'll do that first.
Okay. On May 19th at approximately 7:30 p.m., Todd Whittle, the area engineer for Republic Services, notified me of a fire at their facility. I contacted my staff that night and notified them to go out there early at the beginning of the next day and survey the damage on the facility. My staff reported at the facility at approximately 6 a.m. on May 20th, the following morning, Tuesday, surveyed the damage. Fire was all but out. They were tearing down some metal plating they have on one of the walls for protection of the external wall, just to get the last embers out of that fire. The facility had been ravaged. There was significant damage to the commodities. They may lose some equipment, have to repair or replace other equipment. Basically, baled material, plastic, paper, and cardboard is what burnt for the most part. During the inspection, as always, it's a survey of a damaged facility. The operator is notified multiple times to send an incident report into the health district as required by their permitting, and they're given X amount of time to do that. The regulations notify, they state that they must notify us of incidents and report them to us. They do not give specific timelines. SNHC generally accepts these reports within a week. It has not yet been a week. I may have just gotten that report. I don't know. I was on the phone with the Republic before this meeting to get any additional information. That's basically my synopsis of the whole thing, if you have any further questions on it.
Chris.
Thank you. So they notified you about 2 hours after it started, but as you said, there's probably not a time period of when they have to notify you, correct?
There is not in the current regulations.
Okay. And then luckily no one was injured, I am told. Was it all contained outside, or was it inside as well as outside of their facility?
The damage was internal, but I'm not sure how much of that damage was fire versus putting out the fire. The fire appears to have started outside.
Okay, and they said maybe a mechanical issue, because usually the baled stuff is inside on the left-hand side of the corner of the building normally.
They store it outside
out there in
also.
A while, but
they have both inside and outside storage.
Okay, so it just depends. So they'll do their own investigation on how, or we will probably for fire department, whatever department answered on that, we'll look into what the cause was. So you just have to make sure that the material is properly disposed of that burned. Is that the role?
They may or may not be able to salvage some of that material and continue to recycle it. If not, it will be disposed of at Apex Landfill, I'm
okay,
sure.
Okay, I see. All right, thank you.
Yeah. Has this had any impact on the ability to continue to do recycling here in Southern Nevada? Are there other facilities that are going to pick up the slack? Or
for the short term, I'm sure it'll slow it down. I'm not sure their day-to-day operations right now. I could check with them and look into it. I would imagine they probably have enough up and running to keep it going right now. It is a fairly large facility. The fire appears to be on the east side from most of the documentation I've seen, and the main processing line is on the west side.
So the public could not use this facility today, and I guess businesses that were using it must have a second choice to go to, or?
Neither the public or businesses really utilize this facility. The facility is mainly Republic's facility. There's a small drop-off area for the public, which I'm sure is not impacted. The bulk of the traffic and material going through this facility is curbside pickup from the one bin, single stream.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you for your report.
And I do have one last item. I lose track of my weeks. It was this week or last week I went to the Southern Nevada Governance Forum as an invited guest, and that's the forum that's run by, I think, Representative Thompson. Senator Roberson is there. Andy Eisen was there, although he's not a normal member of that. And they were talking about BDRs related to the health district. And just in my notes and in trying to respond to questions, I think that there may be one or more BDRs submitted to the legislature in this coming session that relate to us. One of which, and I think you had a discussion about this before you hired me, was whether there should be an administrator or a physician in charge of the health district. I did mention to the group that I didn't say I took offense, but I took issue with the fact that because you're a physician, you can't be an administrator. And I think we all know administrators who are non-clinicians who aren't very good administrators. So that is a false dichotomy to me, but that may be something that they'll want to submit to the legislature. Another one was related to the board composition, and I think, as many of you know, there has been, and I think may or may not come from this group, a recommendation to do away with the appointed representatives to this board. As I have mentioned to several of you before, I generally disagree with that. I think having clinicians on the board in particular help me and help all of us to make better decisions over the period of time, as well as the other appointed members. I think that, to my mind, they are helpful to me. But that may be one that goes as a BDR too. And then the second one under the board related to not having alternates. And there was a discussion around the room. I think Sarah, who's the one who kind of leads this, said, well, we want to make sure that you have a quorum. My response is that, at least in my experience, we haven't had any problems reaching a quorum here. And then other people spoke up and said, well, the RTC doesn't have alternates, and other entities to which many of you probably belong also don't have alternates. So that may be a third item of one BDR or a third BDR that may go forward. And then the last one was specifically about environmental health, that there is an interest in taking environmental health out of the health district and putting it somewhere or somewheres else. So that could include that each city would have to develop their own environmental health, and that's what some of the people who represented the cities at this group mentioned. Others thought that it could go directly to the county, much as air quality has. I tried to do, as I would with you directly, make an impassioned argument. And I would, if air quality were about ready to be transitioned away, I would make the same thing there. Those two are public health agencies. The people in environmental health carry this badge because they're deputy health officers. And so they use my authority to do their work. It would be very difficult, I think, for them to use my authority if they don't report to me. And I think that the focus that is on preventing disease outbreaks and making sure that restaurants are safe and provide good, healthy food for both our residents as well as our visitors may or may not be compromised. I can't guarantee that it would or wouldn't. But I made that, I had that discussion with this group as well.
Questions? Yes.
And I'm actually going back on the agenda, but since you mentioned
sure.
EH, I was just, could someone comment on the increase in inspections? If I go to initial inspections in 2013, it was 2056. It jumped in March. It completed 6,104. Then 2014, 2357. Then it went to 7,125. What are those numbers? What's driving those numbers?
Actually, ma'am, I think there's a mistake in the number. My name is Jackie Rezatar, Director of Environmental Health. I think there's a mistake in the numbers that you received, and that mistake was to be corrected prior to this coming out. So I apologize. It's my error, and we will get an update, a correct update to you ASAP, by the end of the day, if you wish.
Whatever works for you. I just it jumped out at me because it was three times as much,
yeah.
And we're still hearing some complaints from businesses, both on the Strip as well, about the volume of the inspections, those types of things. So,
ma'am, if I may, the mandate is once a year,
right?
And we are working with the Restaurant Association as well, and hopefully get that global scope of the ability to communicate and get what the inspectors are actually doing according to the reg and be more business friendly. So that's the message I'm trying to get across. If there's any complaints, it was also put out at the Restaurant Association meeting to call us immediately so we can help work out any issues that are present.
Plus, we're moving towards that more streamlined program, right?
Yes, ma'am, a standardization process, but also working with the inspectors to teach, coach, and mentor the managers and the chefs and the workers, and not make such a drastic...
It's a cultural change. I mean, we used to always have, at least I always said that it was a good bureaucracy that we had here generally, because it wasn't just go shut somebody down. It was to try to say, here's where some problems are, here's how you can maybe correct them, but if you don't follow those, then we're going to nail you, kind of thing. So,
and that was presented clearly at the Restaurant Association meeting, and it's just going to take time. I wish I could change it today, but it's going to take a couple months.
So the new inspectors didn't drive your number. It's just...
I think there's an error in the whole account.
All right, then I'll wait and look at that part.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I would just recommend also, if anybody, you know, outside of the health district is hearing a complaint, it's worthwhile to still filter that back to the health district. There may be some operators that feel like they don't want to go directly to the health district with a complaint, that they'll get a pushback or something of that nature. But I think in my experience, people may have had an inspection where they didn't fare so well, and so then they got a complaint. So it's...
Right.
Worthwhile to understand where the complaint is coming from and what it's all about.
I always try to pass that on, Tim, but thank you for the advice.
Okay. I now get notice of every closure that occurs, and for if it's a pool, and we've had several pool closures over the last couple of weeks, and those really are kind of imminent health hazards. The chlorine levels are way high or non-existent, or other kinds of health hazards. There was, I think, one restaurant closed that I recall in the last couple of weeks, and it really is a health hazard that we do. But the public health model, and environmental health staff knows this, the public health model is to educate. And my goal, our goal, your goal is compliance with the regulations, assuming that the regulations are fair and do protect health. So that's our goal, and there are numerous ways to get there, the carrot or the stick, and as I've just mentioned, we can use both of those as really the extent of the noncompliance occurs.
And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I just want to make the comment, you know, this probably goes without saying here, but the public doesn't realize how many bullets are being dodged every day. At these, you know, it's something when we prevent, people don't get sick. And that's just so amazing that, you know, but I think restaurants have very little ground to stand on, or pools, but we've got to be there and take care of people.
Absolutely. And I'm coaching my staff the best I can in the interim to make sure that we address these issues, but also use judgment in what is a gotcha closure versus an imminent health threat. So we are keyed on imminent health threats, the immediate threat at the time. So any other questions?
Yeah, just one. I want to echo what Tim said. I heard a lot of great comments from the workshop that was held a couple weeks ago. I think that kind of dialogue is critical for everybody to understand where the health district stands on the enforcement of regulations. So I encourage you to regularly kind of schedule those things rather than waiting for people to raise the red flag and say we've got a major problem, because I heard so many positive comments from the outcome.
Yes, sir. And to add to that, our next meeting is August 21st and at Maggiano's, and I encourage all of you to attend to add your input. But also, we've also asked if we can have workshops in the interim to help educate and have a proactive approach to food safety and handling. So it needs to be more of a hands-on approach than anything.
If I may, from the comments that I heard at this governance subcommittee, they haven't heard any of what the two of you have just said. What they hear are the complaints, and that's what they were talking to me about, and there's no way to complain to get the work done. So I would appreciate for all 28 of you to try to take this message back to whoever your constituents are, that environmental health is, and the entire district, I hope, is a responsible health district here to protect the health of the people of Southern Nevada.
And I just want to add one more comment. We are changing the culture of way we present ourselves out there as well, trying to get the inspectors to present themselves in a professional manner, and also maybe want to go to a badge concept, and I hope I'm not talking out of turn, but really gearing these guys to be more professional and curtail their approach and not such the gotcha attitude. So we'll get there. I just need time and patience.
And as I mentioned to the governance committee, and as Jackie and I have talked, this won't happen overnight, that you need to give us time to work this through the entire environmental health and the entire district, that whatever happened before we got here is changing. Any big boat that you try to change in the middle of a course is very difficult to move. You like that metaphor? But. Oh, but we're doing that.
Over and over again.
But we're doing that. but we're doing that, and we hope that you'll be pleased with what you see over the period of the next several years.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie.
That's it.
That's all. All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just had one question about you commented that a bill may be presented to the legislature about getting rid of alternates. What was the objection? I mean, other than initially looking at them to accept them as alternates, there's no cost, is there?
No, I can tell you that from my point of view, it's often very difficult to keep 28 of you informed. It's difficult enough with a board of 14. I believe that some of the people in that room said something about how the alternates may be called on the last minute, may not have reviewed the agenda or the items to be discussed. There are alternates who I can give you names of outside of this public forum who do, and who I know do. But many people have, we're all so busy with all of our lives that unless it's on your direct calendar to do something, sometimes you're not as well prepared as what you would like to be to represent your constituency, whatever that is, whether it's physicians or nursing or the industry or the constituents of the elected officials.
All right, thank you. Our next item is number 8, informational items, and you have that before you. And then so we'll move to our final public comment. Do we have anyone wishing to speak in final public comment? All right, well, I promised the folks from the city of Las Vegas that they could get to their back to their medical marijuana discussion. They really were anxious to do that in under 45 minutes, so I'm going by that clock, and I think I did that. You can talk more about the boat, Bob. So meeting adjourned. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you. Thank you.